All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Now, in the last couple segments of this weekend show, as we've been doing much more regularly, we are going to focus more on the energy sector, mostly the oil and natural gas sectors and companies. We are chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Now, Dan, let's start with natural gas, because quite frankly, natural gas has been on a roller coaster, and more recently on the downward side of a roller coaster. Natural gas prices peaked around $10 in August, then dropped the whole way down to $2.11 in February. So in 5 months, that is a massive drop for natural gas. Let's just start off there. High level, Dan, why did natural gas go through the crash recently?
Well, it actually peaked last summer because the LNG exporters and the utility companies, the guys that, you know, generate electricity or bring gas to your house for space heating, they got into a bidding war over supply. And the profit margin on LNG was so massive, LNG being shipped to Europe was going $50, $60, Europe and Asia. And, you know, they were willing to pay whatever. And so they got it up to about 10 bucks last summer. Now, we might have a repeat of that this summer. I don't think it'll be quite that drastic, but it wouldn't surprise me if we get, you know, $30 LNG prices over in Europe again. But then when that calmed down a little bit and utilities were able to fill their stores before winter arrived, the price started drifting lower. And then what happened over January and February, as far as the gas price dropping, that happened, in my opinion, because we had the last 2 weeks of December were very cold, and we had two big, massive, over 200 BCF draws from storage. They were the two largest draws from storage in the month of December. I went back like 15 years ago, and I could not find two back-to-back weekly 2 BCF draws. And when that happened, so intuitively then, the hedge fund managers and people that just wanted to buy some futures contracts, they went out, and I believe they loaded up on the February and March NYMEX futures contracts. So they went long on those contracts. Well, then we have the first 3 weeks of January, the mildest 3 weeks winter period we've ever had in the eastern United States. We had draws from stores that weren't even half as large as the five-year average draws. And then by the time we got to the end of January, you had storage above the five-year average, and the utility companies then pulled out of the futures market. They believe they have enough gas in storage to make it through the winter, so they don't want to put any more gas in storage because they don't want to pay those storage fees. So, you know, if you're long on a NYMEX contract, when it expires, you have to take physical delivery of that gas. And so they didn't want to do that and stick more gas in storage because they thought they had enough. And so what happened is I call them the paper traders, the hedge funds, and just people that on a hunch bought those futures thinking that the price would go up to 10 or 12. And I had forecast of $10, $12, $15 gas around Christmas. But then, you know, it went the other way and they got stuck with these long contracts. So they had to keep cutting the price of their contracts to get somebody to buy them. And that's what took gas all the way down. I think briefly it dipped below $2 for midday last Wednesday or something. And then on Thursday and Friday of last week, when the March contract went off and the April contract futures contract became the front month, buyers and sellers were then in balance again, and it's already bounced back to like 270, 275 already just in a week. So it went from $2 to 275 just in a week. And my prediction is gas is going to drift higher, and the utility companies will come back into the futures market this summer because they will have to refill storage. Refilling storage by the utility companies is not an option. They must have enough gas in storage to make it through the winter. And if they don't, they are subject to severe fines, actually, you know, legal action against them if they do not have enough gas in storage. And the last thing they want to do is run out of gas like they did in California. California spot prices have stayed over $10. I think there was 50 or 60 days in a row their spot prices on the West Coast were over $10 because they ran out of gas with all that cold weather they got. And they're still getting, I think, as these winter storms keep rolling through. So we have a very interesting situation in gas. And if you think oil prices are volatile, multiply that volatility by three or four times. And that's what the a chart of gas prices looks like. So it can go either way. And we're not going to have gas just settle into some price like $3 and stay there. I think as we get through into summer, I think we get back to $4.
Yeah, Dan, good point. A lot of people extrapolate out recent history with recency bias to the future. And nat gas is one of those sectors that you don't want to do that because it is incredibly volatile. It's definitely a roller coaster. And if you're looking for higher prices later in the year, we were talking off mic. I think it's an interesting point on nat gas that everybody focuses on winter weather. But often we see big moves in nat gas in the summer for what you just covered, restocking their supply of the utility companies. But also, there's a whole theme that's been growing for a long time and continues to do so in nat gas on power generation. A lot of coal plants flipping to nat gas plants. And in the summertime, everybody's running those AC units. There's huge power bills in the summer. And most people don't think about a lot of that power is going to be generated with nat gas. Couldn't that be a driver as we head into the summer and towards the even in the fall as people bump up their energy usage?
Yeah, and also down here in Texas and, you know, all through the U.S., there's a lot of power plants that they can either burn natural gas or coal. They can switch. And so when you get gas prices, so low gas prices kind of take care of themselves, because then the utilities start shutting down they don't shut down the coal plants. They just switch the fuel from coal to gas. And they use a lot of gas. You know, a gas-fired power plant burns a lot of gas. And so they can get rid of this imbalance. But people look at the weekly storage report and they say, oh, the storage is 2 billion cubic feet, you know, above where it should be this time of year. That is nothing. That is a gnat in the size of this market. I mean, during the winter, we have 200 and 300 BCF draws from storage in a week. I mean, so, you know, that's not that much storage. And it looks like right now, I just looked at the 10-day forecast for Texas. We're going to have some cold weather down here, and we're going to be consuming a lot of gas. And Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, everybody heats their homes with gas. So that's going to happen. And I think we'll get to the end of March, and I think storage will be, maybe it's going to be 200 BCF over, but so what? It's still going to be within the five-year range, and we still got to get back to 4 trillion cubic feet in storage before the next winter arrives. And I believe you need to make the argument, or I've heard Raymond James has made this argument also in my discussions with them, that we need a lot more gas in storage because of these LNG exporters need to have supply. And a lot of that gas is stored in caverns and stuff, you know, down here along the Gulf Coast. And if the LNG exporters are going to keep maximizing their capacity, then we're going to need more and more gas. But I think when you look out past a year and a half, 2 years from now, we're going to have a big ramp up in additional LNG export capacity, where now it's about 14 billion cubic feet a day. It's going to go to about 22 BCF a day of export capacity. We're building more pipelines into Mexico, is taking our West Texas gas. And just over the next 2 or 3 years, demand for gas for export plus what we use is going to go up a lot faster than demand, than supply growth, I believe. And you're going to get a crunch. And I think in 2 or 3 years, we're going to be looking at maybe $5, $6, $7 being the base price for gas from now on.
So, Dan, it really seems like this market is growing. Even in Vancouver, where I live, we just keep hearing about governments being more supportive of natural gas components when you're building certain buildings or even house renovations. Clearly, this market is growing. You even gave us some terms there and just how much it's going to grow in the next little while. As the market grows, does the natural gas price become more stable in your eyes? Because a move from $10 to $2 in a matter of 5 months, that's a huge move. So the larger the market, does that stabilize prices a little bit more?
Well, you know, I'm old. So if you go back into the 80s and 90s, gas used to always trade about 1/6 the price, between 1/6 and 1/10 the price of oil. And the reason it did that is because 6 MCF, 6,000 cubic feet of natural gas has the same energy content as one barrel of oil. And if you look at the international gas price today in Europe and Asia is about $15 per MMBTU or MCF. And because it's more priced on its energy content than it is, it's just that we are so blessed in North America to have massive natural gas supply reserves and also the infrastructure to bring it, you know, to most of our homes and stuff. So that's why our energy from gas is the cheapest energy in the entire world. And we're really fortunate to have that. But demand is going to go quick, and we're going to have more and more export capacity, more access to the global market. And then I've talked to people at IPAA and stuff, and they believe that once our export capacity gets over 20 BCF a day, that they believe that the global price will have much more of an impact on the U.S. gas price. So these gas companies I'm looking at, if you make the assumption that the floor on gas prices is going to go to 1/10 the price of oil, well, oil's at 80. So that would mean $8 gas. If I put $8 gas into these forecast models, that price, man, these companies are going to be generating a ton of money. And it is the clean hydrocarbon. I mean, that's the thing. Gas burns very, very cleanly. And I think the emissions coming from a gas-fired power plant are very, very low compared to a coal-fired power plant.
Well, Dan, let's get into some of the companies then, because right now there's not a lot of love for the nat gas companies, or even companies with a big mix in there. You know, maybe they've got a hybrid company where they've got nat gas, liquids, and also oil. But this is a time where investors that are contrarians could be building their list of companies to watch. Any companies in the any of the gassers that you have your eye on?
Well, yeah, we have some of their, you know, the revenues, a high percentage come from natural gas. The purest one is Comstock Resources. About 99% of their production is dry gas from the Haynesville. But they're down there in Louisiana, and they're close to the Gulf Coast. And when this LNG export capacity ramps up, they're going to have the most exposure to that. And the company has used its tremendous cash flow from 2022. They've paid off a lot of debt. Their balance sheet is in great shape. They've started to pay a little dividend, but they have massive, massive reserves down in the Haynesville. But I'm personally putting more of my own money into companies that pay really good dividends. And some of these bigger, large cap independent companies like EOG Resources, Pioneer, Diamondback, they get a lot of their revenues from oil, but they also produce a lot of gas. They have a lot of gas reserves, and they don't hedge much of their gas. So if you believe gas prices are going to go up, because see, they're primarily oil companies and they drill oil wells, but those wells also produce a lot of gas, rich gas. So if you do have a spike in gas prices, they're going to get a big boom from that. And I think in the near term, it's a safer bet that oil prices are going to drift up than I think gas prices in the near term. I'm saying in the next, you know, 6 months or something. But I think by the time we get next winter, prices will be $4 or something. But we'll see. In that group of companies that really pay big dividends, we have a model portfolio called the High Yield Income Portfolio. The average dividend yield in that of the 13 companies on that portfolio is 8.3% as of last Friday's close. And Coterra is the most heavily weighted to gas, but I like Coterra at CTRA, Devon Energy, DVN. I really like Diamondback. Its symbol is FANG, F-A-N-G. The biggest one is EOG Resources, symbol EOG, pays about an 8% dividend. Then PDC Energy, they're out in the DJ Basin. That's Colorado and Wyoming. Boy, that company looks really good. It pays a fixed plus variable dividend. Now it's about 6.4%, but it's got a lot of growth potential as well. And then Pioneer is PXD.
Okay, Dan, thanks for sharing all of those stocks in the natural gas sector and some nice dividends, right? Hopefully the share prices can move up along with the market when it does rebound. Let's move over to oil then. If you think the trend for oil, at least in the short term, could be a bit higher at least, well, the trend for oil recently has been mostly sideways from November, December, topping out around $80, moving down to about $70. Pretty tight range that we have seen here. When do you think we might break out of this range? Why do you think it's going to be higher?
Well, the first quarter is the lowest point of the year for global demand for crude oil. It always is. Demand for crude oil is seasonal. And the reason it's seasonal is because 90% of humans live in the Northern Hemisphere. And we just consume less transportation fuel in the winter. But once we get to about May, transportation fuel demand really spikes up. So it's, you know, gasoline demand, diesel demand is what drives the oil price more than anything else. So you got, there's a lot of diesel consumed in farming, farming equipment to plant the crops and stuff we eat. They consume a lot of diesel. It takes a lot of diesel to run drilling rigs, but we have a diesel shortage. Our diesel inventory in the U.S. is 10% below where it should be. And that doesn't get as much attention as it really needs to get. And everything I see points to demand for oil globally exceeding supply in 6 months. By the third quarter of this year, we're going to be draining above ground inventories of refined products faster than they can be restored. And that's going to draw some attention. And I mean, Goldman Sachs, Raymond James, Morgan Stanley, I get all these price forecasts for oil. And I think the lowest price forecast for oil is $90 US for WTI. And some of them are saying $110 by the end of this year. If that happens, you're going to get a lot of these companies are going to be really, really good shape. Because for one thing, in 2022, a lot of them had hedged a lot of their gas, their oil and gas prices. But now they either have a lot of unhedged production or they started, instead of using swaps, they use collars. So collars have a floor price and a ceiling price. So they put in a floor price to protect their downside. So they make the floor, like, what's the minimum price they can still survive? So maybe that's, you know, $70 or something. So they put a $70 floor and they keep a $100 ceiling on that. So if we, so they get the upside, but they have the protection on the downside. And I really like companies that hedge with collars. And that's one of the things we focus on. And I like some of these smaller kind of companies that are don't get the attention they should. I really like Earthstone Energy. They're going to report earnings on March the 8th. They're going to report a significant increase in their production from third quarter to the fourth quarter. They're now up to 104,000 barrels a day, BOE per day. And the stock's only $13, $14. And my valuation is over 30. So I think it looks like a double for us. I like one company that, you know, you guys up there in Canada should like, Ovintiv, and they have a lot of gas production also, but Ovintiv looks really good to me. That used to be in Canada. That symbol is OVV. And then there's a company, it's not a new company, it's a new name. It was created by a merger of Colgate, a private company merged into Centennial. And then they immediately, Centennial was public, and they immediately changed the name of it to Permian Resources. And that symbol is PR for Permian Resources. And it's a pretty decent sized company, about 150,000 BOE per day of production. They reported outstanding fourth quarter results. And their guidance for this year is about another 10 or 15% production growth. They're completing some outstanding wells in the western half of the Permian Basin. It's called the Delaware Basin. The Delaware Basin is a sub-basin of the Permian, and it extends into New Mexico. And they're reporting some of these 4,000 and 5,000 barrel a day wells coming online in New Mexico. And that one really, really looks good to me.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you sharing some of those more oily names in the space that you see some good growth potential, good revenues. But let's just say that you were a new investor coming into the sector in oil and gas, and you didn't have any positions yet, and you wanted to construct a portfolio. You have a couple different baskets that you follow, like the high yield stocks you mentioned. I know you have your Sweet 16, you've got the, you know, the small cap growth. What percentage would you allocate to each bucket if you were going to build a portfolio for maybe people that want to get exposure to the space now while there's been this pullback?
Yeah, in our Sweet 16, I get that question all the time. It's like, if I could only buy three stocks, what would you buy? Well, who knows? I would like to have some of all of them because, you know, one of them might be taken over and, you know, for a 50% spike in price or something. But and right now, a lot of these are trading as if they're screaming takeover targets, really. But, you know, within our Sweet 16, I've identified some of the larger, safer companies. So if people want to, you know, get in, but feel like they're not having that much risk, I would go with some of the large cap companies. You know, size does matter in this industry. You know, their cost of capital is lower. as they get higher and a bigger reserve base and, you know, more and more proven reserves, the bankers are wanting to loan them money at lower interest rates. They do have access to the capital markets. But now the one thing that I'm really looking for this year is I only want to own companies that are totally, they don't need to sell stock. They don't need to borrow any money. They can fund their growth completely with operating cash flow. And so I want companies that they announce, you know, a CapEx budget, a drilling budget of $500 million. I want to know they have $700 or $800 million of operating cash flow. Even if oil would stay at 70 for the whole year or something, they'll still generate enough operating cash flow. They won't have to go to the bank and, you know, beg for more money. So that's what I'm looking at.
Dan, I'm glad you brought that up. Let me jump in here because I was going to ask you about potential red flags, right? This market has changed so much from the company perspective because these companies have cleaned up their balance sheet. So you say that you want to see self-funding or at least money available to fund growth. Any other red flags that investors should be aware of that would at least lead you to say, you know what, I'm not going to buy this. Maybe I'll watch it at best.
Yeah, I think if you look at a company and they're spending a lot of money on drilling wells or running a couple of rigs, but their production isn't going up, that means, you know, they don't have tier one acreage. They're not in the core of the play. So, yeah, you know, they're drilling good wells. The wells will pay out in 2 or 3 years, but they're on a treadmill. So they're spending a high percentage of their operating cash flow has to be just to maintain their production. You know, that's one thing to watch. I think, you know, then look at the structure of their debt. Also, we like to look at the ones they don't, you know, they can roll their debt forward. They don't have any near-term debt, like, half $500 million worth of debt coming due in the next 6 months. And then there's no way they can pay that off other than go to the bank and, you know, get the debt extended or something. That really concerns me. And then also, is some of their debt like held by some of these vulture private equity companies? There was a couple of them that I really liked actually before the pandemic. They had gotten some private equity money and they were doing quite well. And if oil would have just stayed in the $60 or $70 range, they would have been fine. But when, you know, it dropped down to $10 or $12, well, they had to take big impairment write downs. And because of that, their balance sheets fell out of compliance with their debt covenants, and that debt was called, and they were forced into Chapter 11, and the debt holders ended up with the whole company. So, you know, it's kind of the amount of their debt, the payoff of the debt schedule, and then also, you know, I say the quality of their debt, if it's, you know, bank debt or, you know, it's, you know, publicly traded debt or something, they usually can keep rolling forward as long as they can pay the interest on it.
Well, Dan, you know, that brings up a good point about looking for potential roadblocks they could have. I mean, obviously, the biggest one would be lower prices for the commodity underneath it, whether it's nat gas or oil. And so people want to be defensive. But for people that want to maybe have a little more speculation on growth, on some of the small cap names or some of the growth names, is there a certain percentage that you want to see a company investing into growth as far as the overall mix versus the dividends and the stock buybacks? And what is the ideal scenario if investors want to get maybe a little more risk, but maybe the potential for upside gains on some of those smaller growth companies?
Yeah, that's really why 2 or 3 years ago, I set up our small cap growth portfolio. And I say it in each newsletter, don't just put all your eggs in one basket, buy the whole basket, you know, there's a list, 10 of them that I have. And this is where we've made our largest gains. I mean, we've had in play oil. We're up 500% on that stock. Hemisphere, we're up 300 or 400%, and they still have a lot of upside. They still like triples from where they're trading right now. And the name of the game for a small cap upstream company is growth. They have to get. I want to see companies got a clear path to like 5 or 10,000 barrels a day. You know, these guys, you know, start out and if I can find one, I looked at one yesterday, Rock Resources, a Canadian company. They're at about 3,000 barrels a day, but it looks like they've got a lot of running room. They've got some real nice assets. And if oil even stays at 70, they're going to be able to generate enough cash flow to fund a continuous drilling program, and they should be able to ramp up their production. And it's those companies that go from, you know, 3 or 4,000 barrels a day, but then they can jump to 5,000 barrels a day, or, are in the case of InPlay, they went from 2,000 barrels a day to 10,000 barrels a day over like a 2-year period. And man, that draws a lot of attention. That draws a lot of hedge funds, and that get, now they get excited about that company and they will pile in and buy big chunks. And that's where you get your big multiple expansion on these stocks. So for somebody, you know, wanting to try to hit home runs, you want to look at our small cap growth portfolio. That's where we got a good list of them.
All right, Dan, we're wrapping up this weekend show. Man, I enjoy chatting with you, and I love your knowledge on the oil and natural gas sector and all the stocks that you cover. Also, how you allocate those stocks into different portfolios for all your subscribers to hone in on the types of stocks they are looking for. We greatly appreciate your comments. So, Dan, I'm sure we'll be chatting next month, talking about some of the moves in the energy sector. If anybody wants more information on the Energy Perspectives Group, feel free to email Shad or I. And that goes along with any of your thoughts on the markets. Shad and I love hearing from each and every one of you. So everyone, please keep the emails coming. Keep coming back to our website and podcast. We're going to keep you up to date on what seems like a kind of choppy market, but definitely opportunities still to be had. So Dan, thank you again for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks a lot.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.